This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 15, where we review Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the 1956 version. Look for us on Instagram and Facebook, Attack of the 20th Century, that's 20TH. We post our next movie selections there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. All right, today's show is special because we have a guest.
A guest, an in-person guest.
Yes, we're looking at him.
Which means we're very awkwardly sharing a microphone.
We are. So when you talk, you have to actually talk in the microphone.
Okay.
Good thing you guys brushed your teeth.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. Just ate pizza, actually.
Mr. Mike is here. Woo! Mike is in the house, literally.
Thanks for having me, guys. Long-time listener, first-time participant.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've known you a good 8 or 9 years.
We think.
We homeschool, and you homeschool.
That's right.
And our kids are playing a game right now, actually, Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, they're in the barn, hopefully not sweating to death.
Seems very appropriate for what we're doing right now.
I know. We're nerds, and we're raising nerds, basically, right?
We're doing it well.
That's right.
Now, I've never actually played... No, we've played Dungeons & Dragons since we've had kids, but yeah. I never played growing up. Did you play ever?
No, I'd always heard about how, you know, I shouldn't play it.
Right, yeah, me too. That's how I heard about it.
I always wanted to.
We still hear about it sometimes.
We do still hear those things, yes, that's true.
But no, they're having a good time. There's basically storytelling. It's
kind of
like it's like choose your own adventure.
Exactly. That's
But which I read those books. Those were great books, actually.
Yeah. A selection of them on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah. All right. So, Mike, one thing that you and I have always shared in common is kind of a love of these old horror films. I know we both love like John Carpenter and, you know, things like Lost Boys, kind of the 1980s-centric type of horror. And maybe talk to us about some of the types of films you like beyond that.
I mean, I guess it started when I watched some movie about some monster in a closet. I had to have been, I don't even know, 5. Mm-hmm. And it scared me to the point where I literally could not close my closet door for, I think it was up until high school, honestly.
Oh, no.
But you know, what I found out is that I loved that feeling of being scared. I loved it.
Really?
And so, you know, anything that I could find that, you know, would make me feel that way. You know, if I tell my wife, you know, if I, can't go to sleep at night after watching a scary movie, that was a good scary movie.
Which is very different from us, right? We're chickens, and if it's going to keep us up at night, we don't watch it after dark. We watch it in the daylight.
And it's even more fun when you have someone there who's even more scared than you. It's like we watched that movie, the show, The House on Haunted Hill, and we would like... you know, shut it off every night, and we would, you know, walk back to our bedroom in the dark, and we'd hold on to each other and just expected something to, you know, pop out from the corner. I love it. It was awesome. It was fun.
I feel like you might be selling this a little too much to Jeff, because he likes the idea of snuggling much that he'd be like, maybe we should try this. Maybe she'll be more snuggly.
Hey, that's a tactic.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I've dived into a lot of stuff, you know. During my younger days, it was kind of like the slasher type stuff. And then, you know, I got into more of the supernatural stuff in high school. And I definitely have it's fun. It's fun. I'll tell you the most recent movie that has come out, and I say recent, I mean like within the past 6 years or so, The Conjuring, it scared me to death.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's so good. So if you've never seen The Conjuring, it's kind of like Marvel, where they've got a whole series of movies that take place within that same
world. So is Annabelle in that one?
Yeah. Which, it sounds stupid, you know, a doll that's scary, but it's pretty scary.
I've seen that doll. Really? And then there was one called The Boy, I think, maybe?
I think that was a different...
I think creepy doll movie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But there's nothing like the classic scary stuff. Like, you know, there's a difference in the feeling of putting on, like, you know, something from 2 years ago compared to putting on, like, you know, Frankenstein. You know, that type of stuff, putting that on, especially when it's storming at night.
Oh
my gosh. Yeah. It's, like, awesome.
Yeah. I like that. It's the ambiance. So, that's what gets me.
Yeah.
So something that we always do traditionally is talk about something that we've been watching lately. So Mike, what's something you've been watching lately? It could be a show, it could be a movie.
Yeah, we just finished a show called Your Honor, which we had heard about, which is Bryan Cranston plays a judge, and really good show. It gets a little dark at places, but I mean, we're talking about Bryan Cranston, right?
Okay, yeah.
So that's where his shows a lot of time, unless you're talking Malcolm in the Middle.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And we've been watching The Sinner, which stars Bill Pullman.
Okay.
And that's a good one. I recommend it. It's fun. Every season's a new story, so.
Write these down. I haven't seen these.
Yeah, I haven't seen them either. I guess the only thing I've watched really recently, because this has been a busy couple weeks for us.
Yeah.
But yeah, me and our youngest, Strat, 9-year-old, we watched Get Smart, the movie remake of the old TV series. It had...
Steve Carell, right?
Yep, Steve Carell, Anne Hathaway, which we talked about her a little bit last week.
Yeah, we just saw another Anne Hathaway movie, didn't we?
Witches, yeah.
Witches.
Now, is that before or after his career took off, like in movies?
I think it's right at the beginning.
I don't know.
I think he was like, obviously he'd been doing The Office. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I can't think of a ton of other movies, though. What would you say is his famous movie roles, though, really?
Mostly the raunchy comedy, like 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Is really kind of where it took off.
It's probably after that, then.
When was the one where he's like a single dad? His wife passed or something?
Oh, Dan in Real Life?
Dan, I love that movie.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. He had one, Crazy Stupid Love, or I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, he's not had like a really like big movie that's just been like
smacking the
career defining. I mean, The Office is his career defining. Yeah, but he's good.
So. Was he in Space Force?
Yes. Well, we did watch Space Force.
A little bit of it.
He's really good at like conveying sadness, I think.
Yeah.
He is.
Because he's so funny. But, you know, a lot of comedians like, you know, Rodney Dangerfield.
Robin Williams,
they have that.
Dark side.
That real dark side. Mm-hmm. But Get Smart was funny. What about you? What you been watching?
I have not watched much this week because of scheduling. I think I've caught like an episode and a half of Jeopardy this week, and that might be the only thing I've watched.
Yeah. How is Anderson Cooper doing?
What I've seen of him, he's doing great, but I would expect him to do great. I mean, he is a TV personality. And,
right.
You know, so he seemed very smooth, very collected. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen two episodes this week, and both of them were running ahead of schedule as far as like when they finish a round of regular Jeopardy and when they start Double Jeopardy. So I was like, wow, I don't know if it's the contestants or if it's Anderson Cooper's, like, he's just a get it done.
Yeah, maybe.
Move along. I don't know. They were definitely ahead of schedule. So that's all I have.
No chit chat. Right?
No chit chat. Yeah. He's pretty to the point. Yeah. But not in a, it didn't seem dry, you know, like I think he was doing an okay job. I personally liked the weeks that, what's his name?
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, the NFL guy. He seemed very chill, very relaxed. He wasn't pretentious. I mean, he's not bad to look at. So he did a good job. I was impressed with him more so than anybody else. I mean, obviously Ken Jennings, he is Jeopardy. So he did a great job.
I think it's cool that people petitioned for LeVar Burton to.
Yeah.
That's his name, right?
LeVar Burton.
Yeah. Yeah, and now he's on it. So.
I'm excited to see his episodes. I think he'll do a good job, too.
I saw a picture of him. He's got like a cool mustache now.
Oh, does he?
Yeah,
oh, cool.
Salt and pepper mustache.
All right.
Yeah.
I saw him one time at Epcot, I think at Christmas time. He was reading the Christmas story, and there was like some choral group there doing something. It was really nice. I was like, oh, it's Reading Rainbow.
It'd be cool if he walked out in his glasses from
Star Trek.
Just as a thank you to the fans.
There's probably a lot of crossover fans, Star Trek and Jeopardy, so that would probably work out really well.
Are you a fan of the show Community?
We saw a couple, but that's something I'd been wanting to dig into because we're looking for our next great comedy that we can just throw on anytime.
It's a good one.
It's a good one, but LeVar Burton makes an appearance in that one. Maybe a couple episodes.
Yeah. He's like the lifetime hero of Donald Glover's character, right?
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. I was going to say Abed.
He gets real like starstruck, and almost said Star Trek, starstruck, and like kind of has a meltdown with LeVar Burton in the room. It's hilarious.
right. So today we're going to talk about Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, we said there's this one, the 1956 version. There's a 1978 version that you've seen that we haven't seen yet.
Yes.
Oh, you've seen it.
Okay. Yes.
And then there's one from the early 2000s, The Invasion, mm-hmm. which is
Nicole Kidman, right?
Yep. And Daniel Craig. But it was good. That's actually the first one I saw.
I think, did we watch that together?
We may have.
Because I saw some previews of it the other night, and I thought, gosh, I may have seen this, but, you know,
yeah,
me in details.
There was even, I think there was one in 1993.
Oh.
Was there? No. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
So our movie that we're talking about today is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, directed by Don Siegel. It stars Kevin McCarthy as Dr. Miles Bennell and Dana Winter as Becky Driscoll. Now, the doctor comes into town and finds out that, you know, he's had a lot of patients that have stopped by his office suddenly and wanted to see him really badly. So he goes to his office and finds out that that they've all kind of decided that they don't have anything urgent to see him about. He starts noticing some kind of different strange things happening throughout town where people will say that they don't recognize the person that's in front of them, such as a little boy that didn't recognize his mother or said that she's not really his mother, and a niece of a uncle that said, you know, he's just not the same person. It's not my uncle. Mm-hmm. And so he began to get suspicious, started to investigate. So one night when he is out on a date with
Becky,
yes. Mm-hmm. He gets a call from, I guess, some friends that say they've got something odd for him to see. So he goes over and there is a body on the table.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's kind of, its features are pretty nondescript at that point.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. I mean, he doesn't have fingerprints and yeah. And so obviously that makes him very curious. And they start to realize that the body looks very much like his friend. Mm-hmm. And so he suddenly realizes that he left his date at her house and her dad was acting kind of strange. So he rushes to go get her and they end up coming back to the house. And
the body's missing at that point.
Yeah, the body was missing and they got the cops involved, but they seemed very unconcerned. And then they're back at the house and they find some weird pods.
Yeah, that's when things get real interesting.
Yeah.
And not only are they weird pods, but they start to kind of bloom, I guess you could say, and start blooming human bodies, four of them. And so these blooms turn out to be them.
Yeah.
So really the rest of the movie is them trying to escape because they realize that everyone in town is becoming a pod person?
Being replaced, right?
Being replaced,
These are the replacements.
Yeah. And just a reminder, we will talk spoilers on this podcast.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't remind everybody.
No, that's all right. So one thing that jumped out at us right away, the leading actor, Kevin McCarthy, we knew him best from the 1980s.
Yes.
And he usually plays a villain, right? If you've seen UHF with Weird Al Yankovic.
And who hasn't?
He is like over the top bad guy, ridiculous villain.
He's and then, just mean and hateful. Yeah.
In fact, it was hard for us when he was talking. We were doing lines from UHF, me and the kids. But, you know, he did an awesome job. But he's also in Innerspace. Did you see Innerspace with Dennis Quaid and Martin Short?
It's been a long time, but I loved that movie.
He's the bad guy in that, too.
Yeah.
That's what I knew him from anyway.
Right. So it's hard to detach, like looking at his younger face, it's hard not to see the older bad guy face.
Yeah.
He's actually an Oscar nominated actor though.
Is he?
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. I think I read like in 1959 Death of a Salesman or one of those really dramatic roles.
Yeah.
So that's something to be said, you know.
Yeah.
That's
hell, he did a great job in this movie.
He's excellent in this movie. He is.
Yeah. He sold it.
So why don't we maybe go through some of the interesting tidbits of this film. I noticed that the movie was made for a little over $400,000, and it brought back $3 million, which I think is a pretty big haul at the time. I think that, especially for something, you know, and this is something that comes out anytime I watch interviews with Rod Serling, because I'm a big Twilight Zone fan, and And even the interviewers, like Mike Wallace is one, he's interviewing Rod Serling, and he even asked him a question, something along the lines of, have you ever thought of doing something serious, something beyond like just science fiction? It kind of downplays this, you know.
Because the Twilight Zone's not serious?
Right.
Yeah.
But it made me think, like, for a movie of this kind, I don't think had a lot of respect back then. They were looked at cheesy, right? Like a lot of the films from the 50s.
Yeah, drive-in theater type.
Drive-in. Yeah. They were looked at kind of, they were looked down upon. They weren't looked at as a serious art form or, you know, a film, a serious film genre.
Well, sci-fi has always kind of had that rap, hasn't it? I mean, a lot of, it doesn't get the Oscar, you know, buzz that other films do typically. And, yeah, so it's kind of big news sometimes when, which actually the Oscars are tonight, I'm just realizing.
Yes, yeah, that's right. I was going to say, you mentioned earlier the Oscars are tonight, and I honestly have no idea who's up for what.
Yeah, I don't either.
So we'll have to look into that.
But yeah, I know what you mean. It's sci-fi is often overlooked, and it probably especially was back then.
Something that we like to do is high fives and low points. You know, I'll get us started with Kevin McCarthy. I mentioned him a minute ago. The pacing of this film is so fast. Mm-hmm. And he has to go from being a naysayer in the beginning, like, you know, nothing's going on, everything is fine. Well, that's a little weird that they're feeling that way, to, huh, that's really weird. I'm seeing this again. This is also weird. Right. Putting the puzzle pieces together, keep transitioning to where he is trying to save the world from this invasion. You know, and all that happens within like an 82-minute span. It's very fast. But it's all believable because he sells it. You know, like you mentioned, Mike, the way he acts, the way he plays it out on film, it works so well. And a lesser actor, it just would have been jarring. I think those transitions would have been jarring. So McCarthy gets a high five for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually read something where it was talking about how, you know, he was a lesser known actor. But if you picture someone like Cary Grant or something in the role, they probably would have done well with it. But the fact that he was lesser known kind of made it, I think, sold it a little better.
Yeah.
You don't believe it as much if it's someone you know already.
That's true.
So that would have been really out of Cary Grant's normal genres too, right?
Yeah, but maybe that would have been interesting though.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would watch it again with Cary Grant. I love Cary Grant, but no, I was very compact. That was probably my biggest high five. It's like they really accomplished a lot in there. Was it 82 minutes? Was that what it was?
Something like that.
Wow. Yeah,
80 minutes.
80 minutes. It was very compact. And it was like, there was action from the get-go. And you just kept, you know, you were just moving through this movie. There was no, like, there wasn't a ton of exposition. There was enough that we knew what was happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you were just going from the minute it started until the very end. And you kind of ended like, oh, wait, we're done here? Like, we haven't really fixed everything yet, you know? So
Yeah.
That was impressive. It held the tension the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my high five would be I really kind of dug the direction.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple scenes in particular where I was like, oh wow, they really got into this. Like the scene where the copy is laying on the table, and you can see them in the background and. And what's her, I forget her name. She turns and then the eyes open.
Oh, Teddy. Yeah, the blonde wife. Mm-hmm.
Such a spooky scene. And then just the direction of the street scene which there was a couple street scenes, but like one in the beginning where it was just perfectly normal. He points out, you know, it's all normal. And he later in the movie, he goes back to a window. This is after they obviously are freaked out by things and kind of on the run. They are on the run, actually. Well, they look out and it looks normal. The street looks normal.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, like, it's like a secret signal goes out and everyone turns and moves to the middle.
Yeah, we both stopped and said something about it. We were like, whoa, that's a very powerful scene. When you're looking at your town square, everything looks normal. And then all of a sudden everyone's like descending to one spot and you're like, wait a minute, something's not right.
And even just really the camera angles too, like when they first discover the pods, you know, I noticed that the camera angle kind of went to an angle.
Yeah.
And,
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. So I think Don Siegel did a good job directing this for such a low budget, you know, drive-in movie.
Yeah. I think that's true about just maybe, and that's whole part of the angle thing, is that you don't ever zoom in really close on like the copies. When you think it's a dead body, you don't really know it's a copy that's laying on the table in their house. We're given like a real close up shot. Mm-mm. And when there's a pod developing, like you're seeing it, but you're not. So I think it helped because it's maybe a lower budget picture. You're not really seeing how the sausage is made. It's just enough to like, okay, things are weird here and this is off, but we're not mm-hmm. seeing that, like the Medusa head we always go back to in, what was the name?
The Gorgon, yeah.
The Gorgon, yeah. They zoomed in on that Medusa head and it was atrocious. Like it just
it's horrible.
Yanked you out of the movie. Whereas these were, you could see it, but you couldn't really see it. And that worked mm-hmm. in
well,
its favor.
Yeah, they only spent like $15,000 on the special effects
really?
For this movie.
So, wow.
You know, it was not a lot of money that they put into it,
yeah,
but it worked.
It worked exactly.
Literally,
they
it was
were
just
smart.
Plaster molds of the actors and bubbles.
Yeah. Wow, that's
and
so
fake
crazy.
Pods, you know?
Yeah.
So it worked.
It
kind of
looked like giant Cabbage Patch. If you grew up in the 80s, you knew Cabbage Patch Kids, right? It was kind of like those giant cabbage heads.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
The special effects, too, you know, since we're on that, I'll give a high five to. Even the audible sounds that they were making as the people were like hatching from the pods.
Yeah.
They were so gross sounding and disgusting.
Yeah, they were convincing.
But it was like, and then that bubbly foam that was coming out of it. It was just really much like a disgusting moment. But I thought like, well, it's real typical of nature. A lot of things that happen in nature
are gross.
Are really gross, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Like birth. Like we have goats and we've seen the birth of goats. And
it's not
beautiful.
And children. It is beautiful, but there is something gross about
it. The after effect is nice. The afterbirth is not, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. Well, these pods.
This took a turn.
It did. But I thought it was really cool. Like, they came out and saw it happening. Like, it wasn't just suggested or hidden. Like, they're showing you. And I thought it was ambitious mm-hmm. and effective. And I think just the nastiness, the grossness, I think helped make it more realistic
mm-hmm.
for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were clearly, the other actors were clearly disgusted by it. They were like, what's happening here? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
It was very convincing.
Oh, this is just an aside. What did you think about the scene when Kevin McCarthy, you know, he's putting to death these copies? But he gets to this girlfriend, Becky's body, and they didn't show him killing her.
No, he did. I don't think he did. I don't think he could.
And I wonder if that's what bit them at the end. They didn't spell it out, but I'm just wondering, like, is that why she died at, or she got converted at the end? Was because he didn't kill that copy that was there.
I think that might have had something to do with it. Yeah.
Oh mm-hmm. yeah.
Because they don't show it.
Uh-uh. Yeah,
they made a point of showing the emotional struggle, the mm-hmm. psychological battle he was having. Do I kill this thing? I love her so much, but all he had to do was look behind him and say, "Oh, there she is." Yeah, that's.
But
that's
we could
my,
tell, Becky. Right? Am I remembering correctly? Like you could tell though that when he saw his own pod, he did stab that
one. Yeah, he did.
It was his personal.
Yeah, I mean, he was a man from the 50s. He's a perfect gentleman. He doesn't stab women copies with pitchforks.
That's right. You wouldn't.
You just
do
don't
that.
Do that
you
in
don't
the 50s.
Do that. Yeah,
that's
right?
Just wrong.
In the 2020s, you do right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Equal opportunity.
But yeah, so that is just a quick. Aside while we're talking about it, because I may not be able to come back to it if I don't think about it and do it now. But,
yeah.
But, you know, at the end, when that sequence happened, she had a copy somewhere, and I'm thinking that must have been it. Like, she was fully bloomed or whatever.
I think you're probably right.
Okay, so we'll move on to what we consider low points, or even so, this one may not be just terrible low points, but, like, just questions we would raise. And the first question I would raise is just the science behind all of this. So you're growing a copy, you know, another body is growing, and even like when the original had his hand slashed, the copy that was already blooming, it also developed a slash on its hand.
Yeah, his hand bled.
Yeah. So what would make sense to me is if the copy is running around and then kills the original, or if the original just implodes or something, like I think he makes Kevin McCarthy makes a point of saying, well, maybe they just turned to dust. He says that at mm-hmm. some point.
Yeah, he does say that.
But then the ending is very confusing when Becky is fighting her sleep. And then when she goes to sleep and then opens her eyes and she's turned, you know. Mm-hmm. So what was the point of having a pod and a body? Like, is there some sort of transfer of personality or like, or, and we've talked about what could have happened in this specific case. He left for a long period of time. Did the copy go in, you know, take her place? You know, like, but it wasn't really clear.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a lot of unanswered questions.
Maybe once they fall asleep, it's like a signal is sent out and they know exactly where. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean, so that, like home in on.
I said the same thing. I was kind of watching it. And I was like, well, you know, there's no pod in there.
Yeah.
There's no,
right.
There's nothing in there to for her to turn into. But
I wonder what you just said, not even while you're asleep, but maybe there is like a, they're attracted to each other, drawn, because this is their your copy. So maybe the pod person is like, she knows where Becky is and goes there like while he's left the cave or something is what
right.
I'm imagining. Just the question, more of the, these questions, like the science of it is very unclear to me. Like, why even have a pod? I wish they would have spelled that out a little more, a little better than what they did.
And where do the bodies go? Like, if,
yeah.
You're,
yeah.
if you need a new body to be this new creature, then where do the old bodies go? Like you said, do they turn to dust? Or why do we not have a pile up of bodies somewhere?
Yeah.
Because it seems like if you all are being replaced by this thing that grew in a pod... Where do the old bodies go? Yeah.
Maybe the pod like envelops the body and becomes a new like shell of of the next person.
Like Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe
Maurice.
Yeah, it's Maurice. That's I was gonna say Seymour, but no, that's the other guy.
Oh
that's
yeah.
The
Feed Me Seymour.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, Maurice is the... You're right. Yeah. Maurice is the plant.
Well, so without spoilers, because we haven't seen the 78 version, did the 78 version spell it out a little better?
I was trying to think whether it shows what happens to the bodies. The special effects are very cool in the 70s version, but I kind of feel like I don't remember, but I don't think it addresses it either.
Really?
Huh. I guess they just expect us to be okay with, like, don't question this too closely.
Yeah. Well, I will say the Daniel Craig one that we were talking about is better about the science, because they put something in your drink or somehow then you ingest whatever it is that they're giving you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to sleep and then you wake up, you're turned. But there's not like a second body running around.
Okay. Yeah, I do vaguely remember that.
I am kind of remembering, actually, with the 70s version, it's actually similar to that concept, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this one, there's a separate body that...
Okay.
So
is that a commentary on science in the public and how that's changed over the decades? Because we're seeing 1956, like, we can leave these questions open-ended, because people, unless you're, like, in the science field, maybe you don't have a great concept of what's happening here. And science fiction... It's still kind of relatively new, so we don't have to, you know, zoom in too close on that. Mm-hmm. By the 70s, like, there's some pretty prominent scientific knowledge out there. We're advancing a lot, right, by the 70s. So we've got to answer these questions a little more clearly. And then, you know, when did the Nicole Kidman version?
Early 2000s.
Early 2000s. Yeah, so clearly by the 2000s, like, we've got to be a little more exact with this, because...
That's
the
true.
Average Joe has access to good scientific information.
That's true.
I don't think they were not as concerned with science, I think, in this one as much as, I mean...
Creep factor.
Creep factor. And I've heard that the director said that there was no social commentary on it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That it was, he just wanted to create a good, scary movie.
Just a good, scary story.
But... You can't watch this and not think this has something to do with either, you know, communism I've read McCarthyism is something that, you know, people have talked about.
I mean, it's right in that period.
And it's right during the, you know, when school kids are, you know, are
the
hiding under their desks.
Yeah.
You know, and paranoia was rampant during that time. And that's what the focus of this movie is the paranoia that, you know, they're... going through.
So. Everybody has to come together, kind of that hive mind mentality and no emotions.
Yeah.
I could totally see this being a communism commentary.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I will say really that this film does well, and Mike and I were talking about it a little bit earlier, you know, when the friends have converted, turned, or been taken over, and their surrounding you know, our heroes, and basically like, join us. You know, you won't regret it. I used to feel the same way you did, but now I've learned the truth. You know, this is way better. Like, why are you struggling with all these things that you're struggling with? If you come to our way of thinking, things will be so much better. And just to have that being surrounded, like, you are in the minority when people are doing that. Like, that's a pretty powerful thing. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you wonder, what would you do in the situation? Because you're seeing these friendly faces, people that you know and you love, and they're telling you things.
Your whole community is converting over to this,
right?
Whatever it is.
Yeah. Right.
That's tough.
And it is. You do wonder, like, in the 50s, obviously, it's the Red Scare. Everyone was deathly afraid of communism spreading. And then what would you do if your neighbors and your family all converted? And I think that's why the government went so strongly after it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. there were lists, right? And people were...
Yeah.
Yeah, McCarthy got away with it. Yeah,
I mean, it was a big deal. Like, they were deathly afraid of friends and family converting over and then converting you.
Yeah.
You know, and they convert you,
yeah.
right?
Well, hold on. Kevin McCarthy, McCarthyism?
Is this just a
coincidence or is this...
I think not.
This just became a conspiracy theory podcast.
Yeah.
We're switching genres now, guys.
Now, you know, one of the things I was thinking about during the movie is, you know, they're going through this situation where they can't trust really anyone, mm-hmm. you know, and it's interesting, you know, just in the modern time, you know, this pandemic and stuff, not that we can't trust people, but it's, you go out into public and, mm-hmm. you know, those of us that believe that it's an actual virus mm-hmm. and that it's something to be concerned about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, you go out and you take precautions. You make sure that, you know, you're wearing a mask or mm-hmm. you're 6 feet away or whatever. And you're just hoping that the people that you come in contact with yeah. are doing the same precautions, you know, to prevent the spread.
Right.
And
right.
so it's kind of interesting to watch that movie now. And because there is definitely, I feel like, a sense of paranoia that has been going on over the last year and a half.
Oh, right? For sure.
Let's go back to that real quick. The original premise behind this was, these were seeds that came from space, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that ever spelled out?
Yeah.
Like
they came and landed in a field nearby or mm-hmm. the spores or something
yes,
like that.
It was something like that. Mm-hmm. You're
and
right.
so it wasn't necessarily, I didn't get the sense that it was a intelligent beings sending uh-huh. it. Maybe right. I'm wrong about that, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it was more of a just something coming out of space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is like a Thanos or somebody that just wants to conquer all the planets they can. So they send their seed pods out.
I think it's more of like a rolling tumbleweed.
Oh, this is just rolls, how they propagate.
And it just lands wherever it lands and things grow.
Yeah.
I wonder what would happen.
It's just an invasive species.
Yeah.
It's a kudzu vine or something.
What would happen if they did take over the world, you know, would it, because they would be without emotion, you know, would they need a government? Do they all just think the same way? I mean, there's all these other questions too. Like,
yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Do they truly share a hive mind? I don't think so though, because they have to call out to each other, you know, like when the one gets clubbed and the cop, you know, he's looking at him trying to figure out, have they been converted or not? And he has to go investigate and see that three got knocked out.
Oh, yeah.
They're not very intelligent either, because did he really have to go check?
Right.
I mean, she cried out when that dog
the
was
dog
about
was
to get hit.
The dog was going to get hit. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
No emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get with it, buddy.
They wouldn't have cared about that dog.
Get with the group thing.
Maybe not having emotions also slows you down mentally or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Is there something in that?
Maybe.
You know, I like the fact that it went to the audience, like that they, mm-hmm. you know, he started telling a story, but then, you know, at the very end, he's calling out to people, you're next, you're next. And then he looks at the screen, you're next.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right.
You know,
yes.
coming from a 1950s mindset.
Yeah.
That had to scare the heck out of people, right?
Yeah, right. It had to.
Yes. I bet that was very effective. I would have loved to have like been a fly on the wall in the theater, right? When this, or at the drive-in, or I guess there's not a wall at the drive-in, but a fly in a car.
Yeah.
At the drive-in.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I didn't like about the intro was we noticed that Becky wasn't there. And our kids even pointed that out later on, because we're, you know, they're all being chased by the whole town, basically.
Mm. Yep.
Our heroes. And then, but they remembered, well, we don't think she makes it because she wasn't in the intro.
Yeah, it was like a spoiler.
It was like a spoiler right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because you're really getting flashbacks the whole movie after that opening
true.
Scene.
Uh-huh. You're right
and
about
Becky's
that.
And Becky's all in there, but then you're thinking like, what? But we didn't see Becky at the very beginning, so I don't think Becky's going to make it out of here.
Yeah.
What would have been cool is I read that they actually were trying to get Orson Welles to do the intro and the post talk about the movie. And he turned it down, and then they were going to get Ray Bradbury to do it.
Oh, that would be cool.
And it didn't work out. Still, I mean, it's a classic movie, but how much more classic would it have been if Orson Welles, was speaking at the beginning?
That big booming voice.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing.
Especially considering he did War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
You know.
That scared the bejesus out of everybody, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I thought the movie was enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I had my 14-year-old son sitting there watching it with me, and it's always interesting to judge, whether a movie is enjoyable based on their perspective. Because, they watch, the Marvel stuff. And, I love that too, but you have to have more patience with these types of movies.
For sure.
But you're right. This one did kind of move quick and it was good.
Of the older ones that we've watched, I feel like this is probably the fastest paced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them take some time off to do exposition, mm-hmm. or there's something just overtly cheesy, mm-hmm. like something that, oh my gosh. I'll give you an example. The Bride of Frankenstein. It has that iconic image of the bride, and there's some awesome elements to the movie, mm-hmm. but there's these little tiny people. Have you actually seen them? Have you guys seen the movie?
I have, but I don't remember tiny people.
There's these little tiny people.
Yeah, I don't remember this.
And it's probably like 5 minutes of the movie, but it is so cheesy and so over the top lame. It's like it makes it an inferior film to me there's that wincing for 5 minutes of how awful it is.
There was a point to where I did that in this movie, actually.
Really? What was that?
Yeah, there was this short conversation about how people become dead inside. And I don't know, I guess... I don't know, this is just maybe a little bit too much there.
It got a little preachy for a moment.
Right.
Yeah.
I felt like they were trying to show you what this movie's really about in just a couple lines of dialogue.
Maybe.
They didn't need to.
They didn't need to.
They could have just left that out and it would have still been there,
Yeah. They're right. That was a little bit. That stood out.
Yeah.
Not in a good way.
Because I was into it and then you start talking about it and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
So what did you think about the actress that played Becky? Yeah, Dana Winter is her name.
Was there
more to her character than just damsel in distress? Or
I thought she was good, but I thought both of the main actors played off each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like the scenes of them even before the action started of just them together.
It made
that classic 1950s style
chivalrous kind of romance.
Story. Yeah. Yeah. It got a little. It got a little bit kind of adventurous, though. There was one scene as they're walking into the bar where she's like, "Is that is that an example of your bedside manner?" And he's like, "No, that's later tonight."
So it's true. It did seem a little progressive for 1950s. Right?
So I thought they worked well off each other.
Well, when he dropped her off too. Right, she turned the lights on, and he shut them back off.
Right,
kissed her.
Oh yeah, and then her dad appeared.
And her dad showed up.
I was like, oh, well, what were you planning?
That was weird. What
were you
doing?
Thinking, dude?
He had to have known she was staying with her parents.
Right. Like, wait, her dad lives here? What were you planning on?
And I was confused by the whole marriage. I knew he was recently divorced, but it seemed like at the beginning when they were talking about whether he liked her or not. She was still married. Like
I thought so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was confused,
kind of adventurous for a 1950s movie.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I took it that he was talking about the nurse. Like he was kind of subtly flirting with the nurse.
Oh, maybe.
She was
married. Yeah. She picked him up.
The nurse picked him up. Yeah.
Train station or somewhere. Mm-hmm.
But then later in the movie, they're talking about her husband and whether she does that for him or not. Maybe she was recently divorced too. I think I missed that.
Yeah.
There was some ambiguity there, I think.
Yeah. Someone else that was in this movie was Carolyn Jones, who played Teddy. She plays the wife of the buddy.
Yeah. Jack, the guy who initially calls the doctor over to check out the body on his table. She's his wife, right?
Yeah. And I did not pick up on it watching the movie. And I was kind of shocked when I read about it later that this same woman is famous for playing Morticia Adams.
Oh.
In the Adams Family.
Oh, well, she's blonde in this movie.
Yeah.
So that wasn't... She doesn't look anything like... I mean, Morticia Adams has a whole look.
Yeah.
As they say. And she does not look anything like that at all in this movie.
No, no. She does a lot of screaming and freaking out in this movie.
Yeah, she is. She's kind of like the quintessential 50s scream queen. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's just a 50s thing, but she's not even the scream queen in this movie, but she's definitely taken on that role.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so 8 years later, she would play Morticia Adams in The Addams Family. I didn't realize this either, but apparently Carolyn Jones died very young.
Oh.
53 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Colon cancer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man, I'm glad you looked that up, because I really would not have recognized her.
Nope.
As Morticia at all.
Mm-hmm. And then somebody else that was in the movie that we'd commented on, Gene Willis, or Wills, plays Nurse Sally Withers. They had a pretty cool relationship, I thought.
Yeah, I could have seen more of the nurse. There was definitely... There was something going on. They were almost a little flirty with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But she seemed to have like the beginnings of some depth of character, but we didn't get to see a lot of her.
Yeah. And obviously she's somebody he trusts, because in his moment of crisis, he was like, well, who else can I go to? She was the next person.
Oh, was it her house they went to, and the whole like meeting of the...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, pod people were already there. Like, she'd already been infiltrated.
Talk about a great disappointment. He shows up, they look in the window, and they're carrying these pods.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the guy's right behind him. I think, was he the cop? Or somebody was running.
Yeah, there was a cop came up and was like, we've been waiting for you.
Why don't you go in?
Yeah. He makes his escape. Yeah, I think when he's peeking through the window, the discussion he overhears as they're carrying pods around is that... They just put a baby to bed, or a kid or something, and they were waiting for them. They'll be asleep soon. The pod's already there. You know,
that was a little creepy.
It was creepy, because it was like, oh my gosh, they're just like changing the kids and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a creepy scene. I agree with Mike. The whole when they're looking out at the square on Saturday morning.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of activity, and then suddenly they all get drawn to one spot.
It was very early in the morning too. He makes a point to say it's like, but it's 7:45 a.m. on a Saturday morning. Why are all these people out and about? And I was like, yeah, that's way early on a Saturday for that many people to be like doing life. And then they all like converge on the town square.
Yeah, that was definitely a creepy moment.
It was a powerful moment in the movie. It was like, whoa, what's happening?
What did you think of the end scene? Or one of the end scenes, I guess, where Becky finally succumbs to sleep deprivation and falls asleep and opens her eyes. I mean, what's your theory? Do you think she was already turned before that? Like before he got back to the cave, had she already been turned? Or was this a moment where like she fell asleep for an instant and then boom, she opens up her eyes and she's now converted or...
I don't think she had turned before they got to the cave, because I think there was definitely some conversation there and he's like, I've got to go see what's going on the other side of this hill, you know, because they heard singing, remember?
Yeah.
They heard
music. Well, I mean, like when he leaves and then comes back.
Oh, when he comes back.
Because it's a little weird when he's like calling for Becky, Becky, and then she responds and she uses kind of a little bit of a sultry voice, I think.
It's a weird, is it sultry? Is it mechanical? I don't know. There it's a weird voice. It's not her normal. It's not a way you would answer someone. Like if you're in under duress, you're in the stressed out situation, you guys are like the only normal people left, and for her to answer in that tone, it was very strange.
Yeah. Final summation time. What say ye? Is this a yay or a nay?
I would say this is a yay. I may watch it again at some point in my life, but I'm looking forward to you guys actually watching the updated version from the 1970s, because that's one of those movies that I could turn on anytime.
Okay.
It's really good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you have to come back and talk about that with us then.
Okay. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, what say ye, Kim?
I say yay. I mean, I liked it. I liked the pacing of it. It didn't have, and again, you know, I'm learning my way through these kind of sci-fi and horror movies. It didn't have the ambiance that I've sort of started getting used to from like a Hammer horror film.
Uh-huh.
But the storytelling was there, and it was quick, and it kept you engaged. I like that it wasn't like a super labored movie. It wasn't mm-hmm. long.
Right.
And, you know, you guys mentioned the effects. Okay, so they were cheap effects, but they handled them well with the, I guess it's the directorship and the cinematography. So mm-hmm. it didn't look overly cheesy even. So yeah. It's a yay for me. I think if this is your, you know, if you like classic movies and you're kind of building up your repertoire of what you've seen and what you know, this has got to be in there, right? Mm-hmm. This has got to be in your collection.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It is definitely a yay for me. I would say, you know, we've seen several 1950s sci-fi films, mm-hmm. and not many of them stand up to the quality of this film. I would say this one and The Thing from Another World, they're kind of in that next step up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it felt like, again, you know, I know we mentioned Rod Serling a few times, but it felt like something that of that quality. You know,
right.
It's a statement on the world, it's a statement on society, but it also is just some scare you tactics going on too. And
right.
like you said, it's different than Hammer, but this is more of a paranoia feeling, mm-hmm. which is very Twilight Zone. You know, that sense of, I don't know what's happening and I don't know where this is going, but the stakes right. are high.
Yeah, yeah. Stakes felt very high. It kept the tension through mm-hmm. all of the important parts of the movie.
And I like that this happened in a small town, because if it had started off in like Singapore or Mexico City or New York City or somewhere, you kind of feel like the whole world is just toast. Like there's no way
right.
we're going to contain this.
It's going to spread so fast.
Yeah.
There's so many people.
There's just too
that.
Many people. But this is a small town. Everybody knows everybody. If we can stop these pods from getting out, we might be able to stop this invasion from happening.
Right.
And so it feels like high stakes, but something that you might actually be able to stop.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now we're going to read a little bit of fan mail from our Instagram account. We're definitely more active on Instagram and get more feedback from people, but we are also on Facebook, so
okay.
keep up with us there too. So Kit Romero said, I love this era of sci-fi horror so much I wrote a book inspired by it. This is probably top three from that era for me.
Oh, wow. So somebody's written a book inspired
cool.
by this. Very cool.
Kit_Romero, if you want to follow him or her and check that out. And then Trev9F gives us three thumbs up.
Ooh, three thumbs up.
I think that's definitely a good thing.
That feels very sci-fi, right? If you've got three thumbs, give all of those a thumbs up.
Steve Provaznik commented, planning to watch 1956's Invasion of the Body Snatchers, directed by Don Siegel, so I'll be ready for your episode. Siegel directed many kinds of films and some all-time classics. Dirty Harry, The Shootist, Escape from Alcatraz.
Oh, all right.
Also, Classic Movies Guy said, I knew Kevin as a friend.
What?
He had a great sense of humor. I used to talk on the phone with him a lot. He was very proud of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I also interviewed him about his small role in The Misfits from 1961 with Marilyn Monroe. Super fun guy.
Wow, that is so cool.
That's awesome. And then we just posted today a picture of Dana Winter playing Becky Driscoll. And the same guy, Classic Movies Guy, says, lovely photos of Dana. I'm currently editing a book on her favorite career stories. Kevin McCarthy introduced me. I interviewed Dana for over 4 years. I really miss her friendship. She was a delightful person.
Wow, this guy knows all the cool people.
So, Classic Movies Guy, Gordon Reed, looks like. Maybe reach out to us. Maybe we could interview you and get to hear some of these stories.
Yeah, I bet he's got some great stories.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So, yeah, make sure you reach out to us on Instagram. As always, we're open to new ideas for movies as well.
Give us some thoughts, some feedback.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, we really appreciate you being part of the show today and joining us. And we'd love to have you back sometime to talk about the next Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Appreciate it. And I thank you guys for having me. It's was a lot of fun. I love talking about the movies. So.
Awesome.
All right. So what are we watching next week?
Okay. Next week, we are going to be watching the 1963 Twice Told Tales starring Vincent Price. It's basically three horror stories based on the writings of Nathaniel Hawthorne's collection of short stories, also called Twice Told Tales. So I think This will cover one with like a really overprotective father who basically inoculates his daughter with poisonous plants and makes her kind of a killer. And then one with a haunted house, a house that's been cursed for 100 years. And another one who, you know, another story where he tries to bring a long dead fiance back to life. So it's a little collection of short stories, but it looks, it's got that classic horror feel. And if you know Vincent Price, you know where we're going with this. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I feel like it's going to take me back to, you know, Saturday afternoons when I'm just a wee lad watching
yes,
good old-fashioned horror
lad.
Films.
Yeah, on Creature Feature.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Creature Feature. Yep.
So I haven't seen this. Kim hasn't seen this.
Nope.
So we hope it's good. We hope you enjoy it. It's out on Amazon Prime for free.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Let's go check it out, and we'll do this again next week.
Yep. We'll see you soon, guys. Happy movie watching.
Peace out.
Peace out.
Peace out.
It was a very professional peace out. I appreciate that.
Peace out, yo.